Dan, thanks for having me on your show. In my new book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder, I present evidence that proves beyond all reasonable doubt that George Bush took this nation to war in Iraq on a lie, under false pretenses, and therefore under the law. He is guilty of murder for the deaths of over 4,000 young American soldiers who have died so far in Iraq fighting his war, not your war or my war or America's war, but his war. One interesting thing, Deanne, is that although millions, perhaps billions, of very harsh, highly condemnatory words have been said and written about George Bush in the last 7 years, none of which, by the way, he could possibly care less about, so the words are absolutely meaningless. Up to now, other than talk, no one has done anything at all to George Bush. He hasn't been impeached, although there's certainly been an effort, but he hasn't been impeached. There's been no investigation of him. But in my book, I put together a legal case against Bush that could result in his being prosecuted for first-degree murder in an American courtroom. I set forth the legal architecture for the case against Bush, the overwhelming evidence of his guilt, and the jurisdiction to prosecute him. And I say that if justice means anything in America, and if we're not going to forget about these 4,000 young American soldiers who came back from Bush's war in a box or a jar of ashes, I say we have no choice but to bring murder charges against the son of privilege from Crawford, Texas. People reading my book are telling me that they did not think it was humanly possible for them to have more contempt against Bush than they already have. But to their surprise, they're learning that when they read the book, their contempt for Bush has risen dramatically so. I've even had a couple people with high blood pressure tell me that they can't read more than 5 or 6 pages of the book without putting it down because they get so angry. I don't like to see, Deanne, anyone get away with murder, even one murder. You were mentioning O.J. Simpson. He got away with 2 murders. And I was so angry that I wrote a book, Outraged, the 5 Reasons Why O.J. Simpson Got Away with Murder. So you can imagine the way I feel about George Bush. And I hope on the show we'll have time to discuss some of the evidence that I have against Bush and also how he's comported himself, Deanne, throughout the hell on earth he created in Iraq, smiling and having a lot of fun throughout the entire period of the war. And another thing that I'd like to talk about, if you can keep this or jot it down, I think it's very important. It's the story behind the story of my book. I think your audience will like to know that for the first time with any of my books in my 30-year career, and I've had quite a few bestsellers, 3 got up to number 1 on the New York Times bestseller list, this book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder, has been completely blacked out by the mainstream national media, completely. But as you may know, the book has already become a New York Times bestseller, by way of very powerful word of mouth and people like you, Deanne, who are having me on your show so that I can get my message out to the American people. That I've heard of people arguing that he should be prosecuted as a war criminal at the ICC, but not murder in an American courtroom. But this could very well happen here. Let me just touch on the jurisdiction, but at some point I want to discuss the evidence that I have against Bush. If you were to ask me, what is the likelihood that Bush is going to be prosecuted for murder? I would have to say, and this is just a guess on my part, that the probability is not high. However, I do believe that that directly because of this book of mine, there's a substantial possibility that Bush will end up in an American courtroom being prosecuted for murder. And the main reason I say that, Deanne, is because of the great number of prosecutors that I've established jurisdiction for in my book. Now, on a federal level and a state level, Bush can be prosecuted for the crimes of conspiracy to commit murder and murder. Federally, we're really only talking about one prosecutor, the U.S. Attorney General in Washington, D.C. There are 93 U.S. attorneys around the country, but they would not bring an action against Bush without getting the consent of their boss in Washington, D.C. So federally, we're only talking about one prosecutor. But on a state level, I've established jurisdiction for the Attorney General in each of the 50 states, plus the close to 950 district attorneys in counties within those states to prosecute George Bush for the murder of any soldier or soldiers from their state or county who died fighting his war in Iraq. Now, with all those prosecutors out there, approximately 1,000 in America, and with all the evidence of guilt that I present in my book, I don't think it's unreasonable to believe that at least one prosecutor in America, maybe many more, will be courageous enough to say hey, this is the United States of America. In America, no man is above the law, and I'm going to go after Bush and bring about justice for the American people, particularly when there's no statute of limitations for the crime of murder. Now, within about 4 or 5 days, I'm going to be sending out a copy of my book through the publisher with a cover letter from me to each of the 50 attorney generals in America, asking them to read the book, and if they agree that the evidence of Bush's guilt is clear and that there's jurisdiction to proceed against Bush, and I'm offering my services in any way that they see fit, which would include being a consultant all the way up to and including being appointed a special prosecutor. But what I'm trying to tell you is that this book that I wrote is not just some academic theoretical legal treatise. It's a nuts and bolts practical legal blueprint to bring George Bush to justice. And at this stage in my life, I don't have time for fanciful reveries. I never in a million years would propose a prosecution against George Bush if I didn't feel there was more than enough evidence to convict him and that there was jurisdiction. So we're talking about something very serious here. This is something that actually could happen. I'm only talking about the over 4,000 American soldiers who have died fighting Bush's war in Iraq. Now, he's also guilty of the murder of over 100,000, and that's a very conservative estimate, but I'm being very conservative. He's also guilty of the deaths of over 100,000 innocent Iraqi men, women, children, and babies who have died horrible, violent deaths in Iraq during his war. However, there would be no jurisdiction in America to prosecute Bush for the death of those Iraqi civilians. But there is jurisdiction, which I established in the book, to go after him for the deaths of 4,000 American citizens, those soldiers who have died in Iraq. I want to see Bush tried in an American courtroom for first-degree murder and let a jury decide whether he's guilty or not guilty of murder. And if they conclude that he's guilty and convict him of first-degree murder, it will be up to them to determine the appropriate punishment, one of their options being the imposition of the death penalty, their other options being life imprisonment and life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. When I said that, I went on to point out that George Bush certainly is not an opponent of the death penalty. I think it was, I forget what the number is, I have it here, I just can't remember, the number of death warrants that came across his desk, it was in excess, I think it was 152, came across his desk as governor of Texas. And on all 152, he signed off on the death warrants. Not one single time did he exercise any mercy. And we're not talking about setting someone free. We're talking about reducing the death sentence down to life imprisonment, even for someone who was mentally retarded. So he is a staunch proponent of the death penalty. I don't think there's been any governor in American history that has a higher a rate of approving for approving convictions as George Bush. So, but it started with my saying that he should not object. Well, he would object to his own execution, but he doesn't object to the imposition of the death penalty, even for someone committing one murder. I've prosecuted 21 consecutive murder convictions without a loss, including, of course, the prosecution of Charles Manson for the 17 LaBianca murders. But no, I didn't say before I write the book, let me find out whether anyone's willing to do it. No. In fact, I haven't even reached out yet to the prosecutors of America. I'm going to be doing it for the first time in 4 or 5 days. Deanne, again, I would like to talk, because time is running out, I'd like to talk about some of the evidence, if it's okay with you.
Go ahead.
And by the way, the evidence that I'll be talking about, Deanne, is the same evidence that prompted a very conservative Southern Republican congressman who voted for the war and was one of its very biggest vocal supporters, but apparently he's got quite a conscience. It prompted him to call me at my home here in L.A. on June 16th, last Monday, and say that after he listened to the audio tape of my book, he is now convinced that Bush deliberately misled Congress into war. He said he bought several copies of the book to give to his colleagues in Congress, telling them we've been lied to, read the book. And he proposed a conference call with him, me, and others this coming month to decide where to go from here. But I can tell you that he's a very conservative Southern Republican congressman. Here's one of the main pieces of evidence against Bush. And in my book, I have many pieces, but this certainly is one of the main pieces. In George Bush's first speech to the nation, Deanne, on Hussein in Iraq on October 7th, 2002, Cincinnati, Ohio, He told the American people that Hussein was a great danger to our nation, either by Hussein attacking us with weapons of mass destruction or by giving these weapons to a terrorist group to attack us. And he said that this attack could happen, quote, on any given day, unquote, meaning that the threat was very imminent. The only big problem for George Bush, and at his trial, I don't know how he could get around this, is that on October the 1st, just 6 days earlier, the CIA sent Bush its 2002 National Intelligence Estimate, a classified top-secret report that represented the consensus of all 16 U.S. intelligence agencies on the issue of whether or not Hussein was an imminent threat. And on page 8 of the 91-page report, it clearly says, and by the way, Deanne, what I'm about to tell you, to my knowledge, has never appeared in any major newspaper or magazine in America. Why, I do not know. The report clearly and unequivocally says that Hussein was not, let's italicize the word not, that Hussein was not an imminent threat to the security of this country, that he would only be a threat to us if he feared that America was about to attack him. In other words, he'd only be a threat if he was forced to fight in self-defense. So we know then, Deanne, not think but know, that when Bush told the nation on the evening of October 7, 2002, that Hussein was an imminent threat to the security of this country, he was telling millions of unsuspecting Americans the exact opposite of what his own CIA had told him just 6 days earlier. Now, even if we had nothing else at all, and in my book I have so much more evidence, this alone shows that George Bush took this nation to war on a terrible, terrible lie, and therefore all of the killings of American soldiers in Iraq were unlawful killings and therefore murder. And it gets worse. On October the 4th, just 3 days after the October 1st, 2002 classified report, Bush and his people had the CIA issue an unclassified summary version of the classified report so they could release this unclassified version to Congress and the American people. And this unclassified version came to be known as the White Paper. And in this White Paper that was shown to Congress and the American people, the conclusion of U.S. intelligence that Iraq was not an imminent threat to the security of this country was completely deleted. I have the document right on my desk right here. Every single one of these all-important words were taken out, meaning that this Southern Republican congressman did not see these words because these words were completely deleted. And the question I have, Deanne, is how evil, how perverse, how sick, how criminal can Bush and his people be? Yet unbelievably, and there's no other word for it, up to this point they have gotten away with all of this, and over 100,000 precious human beings are in their cold graves right now as I'm talking to you because of it. Okay, well, let's talk about some other evidence, and again, this is just part of the evidence. On January 31st, 2003, less than 2 months before Bush ordered the invasion of Iraq, on the rationale that Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, Bush and British Prime Minister Tony Blair met in the Oval Office for 2 hours with six of their top aides, including Blair's chief foreign policy advisor, David Manning. By the way, we're not talking about the Downing Street memo now, which was very, very prominent. To me, it's somewhat ambiguous. At a trial of Bush, it would be presented, but it's not strong evidence. We're talking about the Manning memo, which is much, much more powerful, and yet no one seems to know anything about it. At least when I bring it up, they don't know what I'm talking about. In any event, after the meeting, Manning, Blair's chief foreign policy advisor, prepared a five-page memo stamped, quote, extremely sensitive, unquote, summarizing what was said at the meeting. In the end, he wrote that Bush and Blair expressed their doubts that any weapons of mass destruction would ever be found in Iraq before they invaded Iraq. But here's the important point where it gets extremely incriminating against George Bush. Manning wrote that Bush, not Blair, that Bush was so worried about the failure of the UN inspectors to find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq that Bush talked about three possible ways, Manning wrote, to, quote, provoke a confrontation, unquote, with Hussein, one of which, Bush said, was to, quote, fly U-2 reconnaissance aircraft over Iraq, falsely painted in United Nations colors, and if Hussein fired on them, Bush said, he would be in violation of UN resolutions, and that would justify our going to war. So here we have Bush telling the American people, telling the world, that Hussein is an imminent threat to the security of this country, so we had to strike first in self-defense. But behind closed doors, this very small man, George Bush, was talking about how to provoke Hussein into a war.
Now, well, wouldn't that be also the issue in regards to the Valerie Plame case as well? Or you don't see that as being a link in there?
I don't know if that's a link. It certainly is evidence that could be presented, but I don't think it shows directly that Bush tried to take this nation to war under false pretenses. But it would be a speck of evidence, but certainly not strong evidence. You're talking about the retribution against Wilson. Behind closed doors, Bush is talking about how to provoke Hussein into a war, and Deanne, the very last person in the world whom someone honestly acting in self-defense, as Bush claimed he was, would try to provoke, is the person he is in deathly fear of, the person who is about to kill him. Now, if Bush sincerely and honestly believed that Hussein was an imminent threat the security of this country, which was his entire basis for going to war, the thought of provoking Hussein into a war obviously would never, ever, ever have entered his mind. I was on Dennis Miller's show about a week ago. Dennis fell hopelessly in love with the Republican Party after 9/11, and I talk about him and his silliness in my book. In any event, I said to Dennis, let's assume now that you're George Bush's defense attorney and I present David Manning to testify to what your client said on January 31st, 2003. Other than trying to hide beneath the console table, Dennis, what would your response be to David Manning's testimony? And Dennis is very smart and quick, and he said, I'd ask for a recess. Well, no matter how long that recess took, whether it's an hour, a week, a month, or a year, it wouldn't make any difference. There is no response to the Manning memo other than guilt. So this is just some of the evidence, of course. I got much more in the book, and I think that a competent prosecutor, and the prosecutor would have to be competent. I mean, we had the O.J. Simpson case, and I know the jury was bad, but as I pointed out in Outrage, the prosecutors were even worse. So if Bush is ever prosecuted, hopefully there'll be a competent prosecutor, but the evidence is there, and you get an average American jury, and I'm confident that they would come back with a verdict of guilty against George Bush.
Well, what is your argument here, Vincent, on the issue of impeachment and the issue of treason? You know, those issues have been brought up. Why aren't they working?
Okay, treason would not apply here because treason means that you're giving assistance to the enemy during time of war. That's one of the elements of the corpus delicti of treason, that you're helping the enemy during time of war, so certainly treason would not apply. As far as impeachment is concerned, I'm 100% in favor of what Congressman Kucinich is doing, and I support him completely. However, I do want to say this, that in America, we apparently impeach presidents for having consensual sex outside of marriage and trying to cover it up. Now, if we impeach presidents for that, then when a president takes this nation to war under false pretenses and over 100,000 people end up in their graves because of it, obviously the punishment has got to be much, much more severe. If the president, if Bush were impeached, removed from office after conviction in the Senate, he'd still be a free man. He'd still be able to wake up in the morning with his cup of coffee, freshly squeezed orange juice, read the morning newspaper. He'd still be able to travel widely, live a life of privilege, belong to the country club, get standing ovations whenever he spoke to the Republican faithful. And does anyone really believe that for what George Bush has done in this case, caused the death of well over 100,000 people, that he should be permitted to lead a life like that? So my position is this. Yes, we do want impeachment, of course. But impeachment alone would be a joke in this case to anyone who is interested in true justice. They have to read the book. I mean, they can't help me without knowing what the facts are. Now, there's a fellow by the name of Harold Burbank that I think you have on the show.
Uh-huh.
And he sent an email to my secretary. I don't have a computer myself. And he said that within a short time, a week or so, he said that the family of a soldier, I'm not going to mention the city, that will be up to him if he wants to do so, but the family of a soldier who died in Iraq is going to take a copy of my book into this DA of a major eastern city and ask him to read the book, and if he agrees with it, to prosecute George Bush for the murder of their son. So what I would ask people to do, and again, you're putting me on the spot by having to respond to you, that obviously they have to read the book. You have to read the book to know whether what I'm saying has any merit. Once you read the book, if you agree with it, then to gather up people, other citizens in your community, and by letter or knocking on doors or what have you, take the book, take the case to the local district attorney or to the state attorney general and put pressure on them to prosecute George Bush for the murder of their son. No, I don't have a computer, but I'm sure the prosecution of George W. Bush for murder, the publisher is Vanguard Press. The book is available everywhere, obviously, even at places like Costco and Amazon.com. As you know, on Amazon.com, there's over 4 million books, and right now, last I heard, is that the prosecution of George W. Bush for murder is at number 55. Now, that includes fiction, paperback, cookbooks, self-help books, so it's doing very, very well, particularly since I have not yet been on one national television show. You know, when I used to put out a book, Deanne, I never even gave it a thought. I flew back to New York City, started out on one of the morning shows on national television, and then I'd start traveling around the country. This time, for the first time ever, I've been totally blacked out, so the book is selling completely by word of mouth. I even had a difficult time getting this book published, which is something that I never had in my 30-year career. It was an automatic. This time, I had to fly back to New York City and meet with several publishers. It was obvious that they were sympathetic to what I was saying, and they recognized the marketability of the book, but the fear was palpable. They say things like this to me, Mr. Bugliosi, are you sure you want to write this book? And one of them put it in black and white, too hot to handle. Now we go down to the audio level. My agent would call me for all my other books. My last one was Reclaiming History, The Assassination of President John F. Kennedy. It was with Simon & Schuster. This time he calls me. He says, Vince, I cannot get an audio company in America to do the audio on this book. So we had to bring in the British Broadcasting Company to do it. Right now, as I'm talking to you, there's a documentary for the big screen based on the prosecution of George W. Bush for murder. The prosecutors could not raise one penny in America. The money had to come in from Canada. And like I was telling you, it's been a total blackout for me on the national media. I used to be on all those shows. I cannot get on for this book.
Well, and, you're coming up on a broadcast on CNN, aren't you?
I'm coming up where?
Are you going to be on CNN soon?
No, the first time that I guess you could say that I'm going to be on national television, Wednesday night I'm speaking in Venice to about 10 Democratic groups, and I've been told that C-SPAN is going to cover it live. That'll be the very first time that a part of the mainstream media will be helping me get my message out to the American people. But the thing that irritates me, Deanne, is this. The liberal media, let's break them down, about 85 to 90% of them are terrified of their own shadow, and who am I to be angry with people who are frightened? But I'll tell you who I am angry with. There's another 10-15% of them out there who are not terrified of their shadow, who routinely attack the right wing, and they take on George Bush, they call him a criminal and a murderer, and those people should be, it may sound presumptuous of me, but those people should be salivating over this book, because all they've been doing is talking, which is gets no one nowhere. Well, it could help induce action, but nothing has been done to Bush. So all they've been doing is talking. Now, my book comes out and says, hey, let's pursue this. Let's do something to this guy. You would think that automatically, and everyone always says, has so-and-so had you on on his show? Has so-and-so had you on his show? And I say no, and I'm not going to mention their names now, but in the second edition of my book, I'm going to mention these people who should be helping me, and instead, they're not even responding to email from my publicist in New York City. So they, along with the liberal media, and certainly the conservative media, do not want to have me on national television talking about prosecuting the guy they love for murder and possibly having a jury come back with a verdict of death. So I can understand the conservative media. And I'm not angry with the liberal media that's terrified of its shadow, but I am angry with that part of the liberal media that's not terrified of its shadow, calls Bush routinely a criminal and a murderer, and they're offering no help whatsoever. They've also blacked me out. It's been a total blackout.
I want to go to Alfred. Alfred, do you have any questions for Vincent here?
Well, I'm really must stand in awe, and I'm very pleased to hear the from my perspective the great success that he's having. I mean, even though the mainstream media is not responding, I think that what Vincent has done is come up with a formula that empowers citizens such as the family of a soldier to go forward to our baseline courts, which even under the Treaty of Rome are the national courts, are the courts which ultimately enforce war crimes, prosecution for war crimes and for murder. And so I think this is a formula which is going to outlive the administration that is the time in office that George W. Bush has, where he will no longer be protected by the trappings of office. And
now,
where ultimately he can be held accountable.
Now, my question is, I've been hearing that he cannot be prosecuted, he cannot be tried, because he has total immunity. Vincent, tell me on that. Is that true? He cannot be tried for anything until he leaves office?
Alfred has already implied the answer to your question. He's got temporary immunity right now. He cannot be prosecuted for murder while he's in office. Once he leaves office, the U.S. Constitution is clear, and it goes all the way back to the Federalist Papers, 1787, Alexander Hamilton clearly says that once he leaves office, he can be prosecuted for any crimes he has committed while he is in office. Nixon, and I think it was 1974, when he resigned and left office, there was quite a demand among a great number of Americans to prosecute him for Watergate-related crimes like subornation of perjury, wiretapping, obstruction of justice, and no one was saying that he couldn't be prosecuted.
To have another angle of attack on this process as we are to protect ourselves from tyranny from without and from within, as we watched John F. Kennedy's head slap backwards instead of forward, as the official story told us, and George W. Bush being kind of head of the CIA at that time, and them voting out the backing of silver on the plane on a flight back when President Kennedy had just the opposite proposals. I mean, it was an inside job through and through. We were taken over at that time, so we have tyranny right from at 63 on. These boys defending us or creating all these laws are ambiguous to the fact that, you know, we have mind control and distortion of all the facts from that point on, obviously. And so, I mean, there's many other avenues of attack, I would say.
Well, he's saying, Vincent, that, you know, there are, you know, arguments here that there's, you know, the issue of conspiracies from within the government going all the way back. Do you think that's, you know, true, that this thing has been leading up for years and years, and it's just George W. Bush that's in office now, but it's more of a pattern from past presidential candidates?
Are you asking me that?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Well, I don't think there's any precedent at all in American history, and I've done some studying on that, which we won't have time to get into now, for any American president taking this nation to war under false pretenses. There's the so-called Gulf of Tonkin thing, but I've studied that thing. There's no evidence that LBJ was part of any pretext setting up the Gulf of Tonkin. There's no evidence. Bush is an outrageous, what would the word be, aberration. We've never seen his likes before. One point that I do want to make before we end the hour here, because it's very important to me, what has served, Deanne, as an emotional underpinning for my book is the fact that throughout the hell on earth that this guy created in Iraq, with over 100,000 people dying horrible, violent deaths and hundreds of thousands of their survivors crying out hysterically and having terrible nightmares over what happened to their loved ones, this guy, George Bush, and the evidence is overwhelming, it's all in my book, has smiled through it all. In fact, if you see a photo of Bush and six or seven other people all smiling, who has the biggest smile on his face, George Bush. The evidence is very clear that while young American soldiers who never had a chance to live out their dreams were being blown to pieces by roadside bombs in Iraq, Bush was having fun and enjoying life to the fullest. I'm talking about running, bicycling, joking with friends, slapping backs, dancing and swiveling his hips like Elvis to blaring music, almost always appearing to be in the very best of good spirits. And your audience, Deanne, doesn't have to take my word for it or the photo section of my book where it shows Bush just having a ball. Bush himself has had no hesitancy at all in saying things like this over and over again. And while I'm quoting Bush, try to think of Roosevelt, Truman, LBJ, Nixon during their respective wars saying things like this. Laura and I are having the time of our lives. I'm in a great mood. It's a perfect day. I'm feeling pretty good about life. Deanne, even if George Bush was only guilty of making an innocent mistake in taking this nation to war in Iraq, not murder, as I firmly believe, with all of the death, horror, and suffering he has caused, what type of a monstrous individual is it who could be happy with his life? So that's the emotional underpinning for this book.
I have to stop you here, and I thank you very much, Vincent, for coming on this show. Please get The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder, and we want you to come back again. Good night, and we're going to be up for the next hour on the broadcast. Thank you very much, Vincent.
Thank you, Deanne.
I appreciate you and your work.
Thank you.
Men are